Most of us love the idea of traveling, but between the constraints of money, time, and the hustle and bustle of day-to-day life, few of us ever get to visit all of the places we'd like to experience. On this show, Phil and Pete have conversations with interesting people who have and do live in some of the most remote and exotic locales on the planet. Together, we'll travel the world from the privacy of your earbuds in Vicarious Encounters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Vicarious Encounters. I'm Phil.
And I'm Pete.
And this week, our guest is Taylor Herndon, and she's going to talk to us about her time in Taiwan. So, Pete, what's been going on with you lately?
I'll tell you, Phil, I got a chance to play in a volleyball tournament yesterday for the first time in ages. It was really a lot of fun. COVID has put a big dent in my athleticism, but this was good getting back out there again. And the biggest news about the volleyball tournament is that I woke up this morning and I'm still capable of walking.
Nice. So, now are you good at volleyball, or is this completely recreation?
Anytime you ask, is somebody good at something, it all depends on what you compare yourself to. I played in nationals a few years ago, so I'm definitely better than some. But the more you step up in competition, the more you realize, wow, there's people out there that are a whole lot better than I am. And it's quite humbling.
Sure. What size of teams are these? Is this like six people or?
I most commonly play men's sixes. I do some doubles as well, but men's indoor sixes is my favorite.
Volleyball was our biggest family game when we would get together for 4th of July and for other big gatherings like that. But we always played nine people, so it was really easy to not be terrible.
Yeah. And it's really kind of, you know, like any sport, if you play somewhat more seriously and then you play with people whose technique doesn't follow the conventions, it can be painful. So, I'm a little bit of a volleyball snob when it comes to that sort of thing. So I guess it means I'm not horrible at volleyball.
Oh, there you go.
But what about you, Phil? What's been going on in your world?
I am getting ready to become the acting version of a soccer mom, whatever that term is. My daughter got the lead in the play for the community theater here, and her rehearsals start this week. And so I'm just going to be shuttling her back and forth, and that's going to be my life for the foreseeable future.
Please tell me that you're driving a minivan.
No, I'm driving my car. So my wife will have the minivan at an airport somewhere because she is traveling. So.
Oh, okay. So there is a minivan involved. Good.
Right. Fair enough.
Well, fantastic. Well, we are thrilled to have Taylor Herndon with us today. Taylor, welcome. I understand you have spent some time overseas, a couple different locations, but I want to hear a little bit today about your time in Taiwan. When were you there?
Hello. Yeah, I was there in 2017. So we're hitting the 5-year mark now for a lot of things.
Yeah. Wow. So when you were in Taiwan, what did you love about that country? What did you love about the people there?
There's so much about Taiwan that I love. And I feel like I rant about it quite a bit at this point, because it's really not a huge tourist destination. It's not swamped with people. You know, I live in New York, so I'm used to having a plethora of tourists around me at any given point, but it's very clean and calm as a city, and the people are so respectful. Not to mention there's mountain ranges, there's beaches, it's gorgeous, like nature wise every twist and turn. It's a really lovely place. The people are, even if they didn't speak English or couldn't communicate with me, they were still helpful, they were so respectful. And the country itself has been through a lot in terms of its history. They went through a period where they were kind of passed around by several different global superpowers during wars and kind of handed off, and all of these topics that are still a bit sensitive, but I think have really kind of solidified their national identity. So they have a lot of pride in their country, and they're very open to sharing that with someone like me who just kind of shows up and is there. And not to mention, they have the best food you'll ever have.
Okay. So we're eating too. Good. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, so when you're talking about it being beautiful, take me to some place, you know, paint a picture for me. What is something there that's beautiful?
So one of my favorite places, it's on kind of the east coast of Taiwan. And we went just for a weekend trip. It's called Hualien. And it's a lot of hiking, a lot of national parks, but it's these mountains that are pretty much all marbled. and the roads are all kind of carved through the mountains. So they're very much still respecting the original land structure and not just demolishing things. So when you're driving, you're just going through these massive overpasses of mountain, and it's all this like marbled stone just everywhere. And they're crazy tall. So that's really all you can see is that and these kind of rivers below that run through. And it's gorgeous. Like, even if you're not hiking, you can just stand there and look at it. It's just as cool. Someone who grew up in the mountains, I always really appreciate a good mountain scene anytime I can get close to one.
You mentioned the people. Give us a little vignette of kind of a time when you ran into somebody and they were uncommonly helpful. You mentioned their kindness and their helpfulness. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, as someone who, you know, traditionally can get a little in over my head when I travel, or a little unprepared. So Taiwan has a pretty big rainy season. It is an island. And I was very unprepared for this. I had one little umbrella and I was notorious for losing my umbrellas. I just leave them in stores or forget them at home. But anytime a rainstorm would come, because, you know, you walk out and it's sunny and then 5 minutes later, it's downpouring really hard rain. And so anytime I was out and someone saw me when I got stuck in a rainstorm without my umbrella, people would literally run to help me and to give me kind of shelter under theirs, which, I mean, when it's downpouring in monsoon season, doesn't entirely do that much to begin with. But it was just so kind, people who were very willing to run and give me part of their umbrella until the rain passed. And then after rainy season, you get, you know, really bad bugs that come out in the heat. The sun is really strong. And being someone who's very pale and fair skinned and clearly who bugs really enjoy, people would also come up to me. Like I would be sitting in a cafe and the woman next to me would just start spraying me with bug spray. Like whether I asked them to or not.
They could tell, like, you had a problem.
Yeah, they were like, I don't know what this woman's deal is, but clearly she needs help. Oh, wow. But it was always so appreciated, though, because I was getting eaten alive and I was, you know, unprepared at times, and I was getting sunburnt. So people were just consistently looking out for me in a way that I had never really experienced in the States. But people kind of keep to themselves and they probably notice all my bug bites or my sunburn, but nobody's trying to offer me their can of bug spray to help.
Now, you mentioned monsoon season. What was that like? Did you experience storms more severe than what you'd experienced before that?
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty severe. It was really just random, I think, was the hardest part to get adjusted to. Because here, growing up on the East Coast, we'll get storms, but they're always forecasted, so I prepare for them. But in monsoon season, it's really, you know, they can't even really give a proper forecast sometimes because it comes and goes in a matter of 10 minutes. So it was definitely something I had to get used to, just in terms of always having a rain jacket or an umbrella on me, or even the shoes I was wearing, my socks would get soaked. So I'd have to bring extra socks with me if I went certain places, things like that, that really took some readjusting to.
So you mentioned the food. Phil and I, one thing we definitely have in common is we love unique and ethnic cuisines. If we were going to join you, let's say we've set the way back for 2017, we go back, we visit you while you're there, where are we going and what are we eating?
Oh boy, I could take you on a whole food tour. One of my first weeks there, a local friend took me to a restaurant. And it was funny because there are so many restaurants, the cost of eating out in Taiwan is generally cheaper than buying groceries. So a lot of produce and things have to be imported. That cost adds up really quickly. So most people eat out all the time, meaning there's really incredible restaurants. And a lot of the places are just kind of very small, hole in the wall situations. They didn't even have names, or they probably did, but my community that did not read Chinese characters couldn't tell. So I would take you to a place that we called Blue Door, because it had blue doors and that was our only signifier of what it would be called. And they had a dish called exploded chicken, which essentially it was nothing complicated, but it was rice and chicken with peanuts cooked, a lot of peanuts kind of cooked and mixed in with it. and a lot of greens and this certain kind of sauce. And I have tried to replicate this since I've been back so many times, and I will never come close to the beauty of exploded chicken. And it's a really big portion. It'll fill you up for the whole day. That would definitely be a stop. Taiwan also has...
That's quite the mental picture. Exploded chicken.
Yeah. It sounds a little alarming when you first get there, but it's really, it's kind of a fan favorite in that neighborhood. And Taiwan also has really amazing soup dumplings. In Mandarin, it's called xiaolong bao, which literally translates to little meat bag. And you can go to certain restaurants and watch them make these dumplings. And the process of it is an art form in and of itself. They fold every single one like 28 times at the top before they can put all the soup inside of it. And so those are really... were like a delicacy to me by the end. Anytime I could get soup dumplings, that was the best. And then that, and of course, finish it off with some bubble tea. Taiwan is home to like boba and bubble tea, actually. That was kind of where it was made. So they do have the best in the game, in my opinion, for bubble tea.
Okay, so I have a question about that. I have one of my favorite podcasts is by an author, and he spent time in Korea, and he goes on and on about the boba in Korea and the fact that it was not just, you know, the normal tapioca or whatever, but they'll just put all kinds of solids in their tea. So what are some of the other things, or does Taiwan put other things in there, and what sorts of things do they put in?
They have a pretty good variety of what goes in their bubble teas. A lot of places have like different fruit flavors of bubbles, so like mango or strawberry, any kind of tropical fruit you can think of. Some places have like a pudding essentially that goes in the bottom, which I only ever got once or twice because it's, I mean, trying to suck that through a straw is a little complicated. But you kind of have to like spoon it out or like really stir the straw through it to break it up. But it's just like a jelly that sits on the bottom. And then I have been to a few places that had like matcha bubbles. Somehow they condense matcha into boba, or literal pieces of fruit that would be condensed into that. So there's a pretty big variety. I was pretty bland in my choice. I generally just got the black boba tea with tapioca, but that was my classic go-to. So
as a New Yorker now, have you been able to find any Taiwanese cuisine there?
Yes, that was one of my, something that was the most exciting for me moving to a big city, coming from an otherwise relatively small town that did not have a huge diversity of food. I think my first weekend here, I was like, I'm going to Chinatown for the entire day. I'm not going to leave until I find good soup dumplings or good desserts of some variety. So I do have like two restaurants here now that serve really good Taiwanese cuisine. So definitely feel like a local at this place at that, by that point.
So when you were eating over there, did you ever run across anything that was particularly different or unique or odd compared to what you were used to in the US?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the cuisine of, you know, the East Coast versus East Asia is going to be different. Something that really caught me off guard is everyone says, okay, well, if you're eating Chinese food in the United States, it's not going to be actual Chinese food. And I never realized that that was also true vice versa, was if you eat American food in Taiwan, it's not going to be the same. And something there that I realized kind of the hard way is that Taiwanese people believe, and, you know, which is true to some extent, that Americans love peanut butter. And we do largely, but you'll imagine my surprise when I went to an American cafe and ordered a burger and it had peanut butter on the bun. Really caught me off guard. And after that, I realized everywhere I went, if I ordered a sandwich of any variety and they saw just me and the way that I look, I would have to say no peanut butter. And they would always be surprised. They would, you don't want peanut butter in your sandwich? Like, what, are you sure? And I was like, no, please leave it on the side maybe if it has to be on there, but I cannot bite into another peanut butter burger.
That's awesome. It's actually funny. My hometown growing up had a restaurant that was nationally known for having burgers with peanut butter on them. And it's quite delicious if it's just the peanut butter. But yeah, once you put lettuce and tomato, that's going to be terrible. But just the burger and peanut butter is top notch.
Yeah, there was probably the second or third time when I had ordered something and forgotten to ask for it and had to eat a peanut butter sandwich. I was like, oh, they have a point, you know, it's it could be worse. I think I've kind of gotten used to it. But then a few days later, I ordered a salad that came with a scoop of peanut butter on the side. And I was like, this is where I draw the line. Can't do it.
What are some other things that you were able to eat that was a little different than what you might typically experience in America?
I went to a sushi market that's really good, really well known. It's like a meat before you eat kind of situation, which we have in the States, but they had these Japanese king crabs that I had never seen before in my life in these big tanks. But Japanese king crabs have like 3 to 4 feet worth of legs. And so I couldn't see what was in the tank. I just saw these legs like a horror movie just out of the dark water would like rise up and shoot out. I really got scared. It was like, I don't even need to meet it. I'll just eat it. Like, I'll be in the next room. So that was a little interesting. They tasted really good, though. And then Taiwan also has really lovely night markets. They're kind of scattered all over the city. The more rural you get, the less common they are. But they always have a wide variety of food. My favorite was Shulin. And you can just go for like miles down little alleyways, and every alleyway has 20 more vendors selling different things. And so those were always some of the best food, but also some of the most interesting. I did see a couple fried like turtles, miscellaneous fried animals, pretty much. They had little octopus that were kind of miniature and fried. Their desserts, where they would cover like a cherry, basically, just in a thick, like hardened coat of sugar and put it on a skewer, which was, at first I was like, what is that? But they're actually very good. It's kind of just like a lollipop, just with fruit in the middle. One of my personal favorites was a cart near where I was living, who they had basically every part of a chicken on a skewer, several of them. And you could pick the skewers as well as vegetables or, you know, kind of miscellaneous foods. And they would cook them all up in this one sauce on their little grill and then hand it to you in a little bucket. You could just have as many skewers as you wanted. And so the first day I was looking at it and they were labeled chicky. They didn't have the N in chicken. So we called it the chicky cart, because it would be chicky brain, chicky like liver, chicky leg. My personal favorite was chicky ass, was how they had labeled it. So that was, you know, definitely interesting. Some of the English translations of things. They had a place next door to us as well, had a dish called Squid Overlord. And that one I never tried, but I was very curious. Like, oh, maybe I'll get the Overlord for lunch today. That sounds like a good call.
How do you overlook the Overlord?
I don't know. If I could go back and do it all over again, I'd try the Squid Overlord.
I hope you get that chance. So you got to see a lot of the area, a lot of the scenery. Did you have any interesting encounters with animals or insects? Something that, again, you might not experience in the States.
Yeah, I had friends who, you know, lived abroad and who had shared about monkeys before, but I myself had never really encountered monkeys closely in a situation that wasn't just a zoo. And so my roommate and I, who we got to be very close, she was also very adventurous. So we'd try to go do a hike or something every weekend at least. And one weekend she said, there's a place just called Monkey Mountain that's supposed to have a ton of monkeys. She was from the Czech Republic, so she had never seen them either. She really wanted to go. And we got there. And the first kind of interaction we had at the base of it was a man had just left 7-Eleven, which in Taiwan, 7-Elevens are on every street corner. That's where you pay your bills, pay your student loans, get your cell phone plan. Like everything is included in the 7-Eleven. And a man had just gotten this like iced coffee, and a monkey just kind of like comes up behind him and literally like taps his leg. And he gets basically into like a fight with this monkey, like he would a child, kind of scolding it and like holding his coffee away from it. And finally, the monkey did this really smart thing where I kind of pretended to give up and just like shrugged and walked away until the man kind of dropped his guard and went back to drinking his coffee and put the bottle in his backpack. And as soon as he did that, the monkey turned around and ran and grabbed it. So they were just, yeah, after that, I was like, okay, well, let me tuck away whatever food I have. And we got kind of further up the mountain, which was a really beautiful hike. And we saw a few monkeys, but nothing too close. The only real problem was we got lost, as we did several times, and kind of ended up in this really like not populated part of the hike, kind of off the beaten path. And it was getting dark also. So I guess the monkeys were just more comfortable. There weren't as many people around. And I swear we stumbled onto what looked like a Thanksgiving dinner, just full of monkeys. There were probably 20 of them sitting in a big like round circle around a gazebo. And they all turned to look at us when we walked around. And that was the day my roommate realized that she has a phobia of monkeys. She did not like them in the slightest. And they never, you know, chased after us or anything, but there even was one on the way back down. We finally found our way kind of back towards the main path after like an hour of kind of wandering around. And there was one just kind of chilling on the path. He had like an arm up on a little plant, like looked as laid back as could be. And I was like, okay, we can just walk past him. I think he's fine. But she was so nervous that we we kind of just stayed stuck in place. And this monkey looked at us, just gave us the most pitiful look and literally like shook its head and got up and walked away. I don't know if it could sense her fear, but I appreciated him giving us a pass on that one. So lots of monkey interactions kind of anywhere we went hiking wise. And then after rainy season, Taiwan also gets, I mentioned the bugs before, they get these tiny clear mosquitoes that you can't even really see them, but they bite you like nobody's business. And apparently everybody knows if it's mosquito season, you just stay inside or you wear long sleeves or you have this crazy repellent bug spray. But I was very unprepared for that. And I just went to get lunch and came back and suddenly had 10 new bug bites. I was like, where? I was outside for 2 minutes, you know, where did that come from? And it wasn't until a few weeks then that I could even see one of them because it landed on my hand. But they're literally the size of like a dime and they're just clear. So they're super hard to see or kill or really track at all. And I think by the time I left, at one point we were counting my bug bites for fun and I had up to like 75 of them at one point, just all over me. So that was
kind of feels less like cheating that they're clear.
Yeah, I was like, the point is that I'm supposed to be able to kill you. Like, right.
Now, because they were clear, were they more pink or red once they were full?
You would think. I tried to look at the one that I saw that day, but I couldn't even tell. It would be fun, though, if they were a little transparent, just a little hints of red in there.
I assume that you're not fluent in the local language. But do you ever try to say something and find that you were stumbling over your words, trying to get more familiar with speaking in the local language?
When I was there, I was studying Mandarin, and Mandarin's a tonal language. So the way you pronounce things really changes the, you know, what you're saying. So there were a couple times where, you know, I was in a store and the word for buy and the word for sell are basically the same thing. They're just pronounced differently. And so there were several times where I would ask to buy something with the wrong inflection and the vendor would get very confused. Like, that's mine. You can't sell it in the first place. And so little things like that, but embarrassment is kind of a big thing in Taiwanese culture. They don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to embarrass other people. So they're very polite in that sense. So usually if I did really mess something up, they would just come up to me politely and say, hey, you know, you're saying it wrong. This is how it's pronounced, and correct me, which I really appreciated. But I definitely did just have some encounters where I had to scrape by on my bare minimum of Chinese. I had once I was taking a bus to the mountain range, actually. And we pulled over in a very rural area just for a restroom break, was what the driver had said. The driver didn't really speak any English, but I told him that a couple of us had to use the restroom. So we pulled over at this place and I had like a little conversation with this driver. So I was like, okay, he remembers me. There's several of us on this bus. You know, the bathrooms are like a 5-minute walk away, but it should be fine. So I went to the bathroom. And when I came back, my bus was pulling out of this massive kind of football sized parking lot. So it was quite a way away. And my phone was on it. My roommate was on it. Like everything I needed was on the bus that was going very fast in the opposite direction from me. And I just went into panic mode and I literally sprinted probably quicker than I ever have. And the only Chinese I can remember to say is "dengisha," which is kind of, you know, like, wait a minute. And it's meant to be used like if you're a vendor and someone's trying to ask you a question, you say, oh, "dengisha, dengisha," like, give me just a second and I'll get to you. But I was like, that's the closest thing I can think of to please stop the bus. So I was just sprinting through traffic yelling, "dengisha, dengisha," like, voila, I'm coming. Needless to say, the bus driver was very surprised to see me at the door when he was in the middle of the road, kind of like running next to it. But that was definitely a bare minimum level of language use that I was able to have for the day.
I'm glad you managed to catch him, or, you know, who knows where you'd be today.
Yeah, my roommate was trying to tell him as well, but she didn't speak any Chinese. So bit of a language barrier there.
So earlier you were talking about the beauty of the place, and I was asking you, like, so if Phil and I came, where would you take us and what would we eat? And I feel like we talked a lot about things to eat. I'm ready for some exploding chicken, but I'm wanting to know where are some places we would go? What would we visit?
Yeah. Taipei City really does have a lot to it. And kind of the beauty of Taiwan is that you're never more than a few hours from the coast. So if you like beaches of any variety, there's plenty, but even so there are several options. One of my favorite places was Black Sand Beach. That's about 45 minutes outside of Taipei City. That is kind of on a volcano. Therefore, all the sand has kind of just turned really dark. So that was really cool for me. I really enjoyed it. I didn't think about the fact that black sand would draw more sun. So that was probably the most sunburn I got in my time there. But there's also an area called Kaohsiung that is kind of southwest of Taiwan. And that's a little older, a little more historic area of Taiwan. There's a lot of temples there. So it has a lot of religious significance. And the temples in Kaohsiung would be like one was literally a dragon that was 20 feet tall and however many feet wide that you could just walk. You would walk in through the mouth and come out at the tail, things like that, that are places of worship that were really, really interesting. And just a lot of pagodas, a lot of temples that were so intricate in a way that churches or places in America that are considered holy, that are still, you know, in strip malls. And that's still a very valid place of worship and awesome. But to see such reverence go into the detail and how these buildings are made and they're gold and even the ceiling has, you know, like a million flowers on it that I can only imagine how much time was put into that. So being able to be in those places and really kind of observe the details and the reverence that's built into their architecture, I think is really lovely and something that, you know, you really don't get a lot of in a lot of places in the state. Our architecture is a little more cut and paste. So that definitely is something we would do. Hualien, as I mentioned before, has the most gorgeous mountains. Also kind of in the center of the island is Yushan, which Shan is just mountain in Chinese. And that's a pretty big national park that has a lot of hiking as well. And the mountains are really beautiful. They're not necessarily jagged. They're kind of just rolling, but they just go on for miles and miles. So when you're there, that's really all you can see. And some of them are very steep. A lot of their hikes are really interesting. I learned very quickly a lot of hikes in Taiwan were more like nature walks. It was paved, it was flat, you know, there were a lot of pretty foliage and stuff on the side. And then other hikes were very intense. And you kind of really had to do your research to know which one you were going to get. And the first trip I took, my friend wanted to do a waterfall hike. So it was like, okay, we're by the beach. From what they had told me, I was like, oh, okay. So this is a nature walk hike. It's going to be paved. There's a little path and I'll just walk up to the waterfall and walk back down. And then we'll go to the beach after. So I had worn sandals, essentially this kind of bright yellow dress. And some locals saw me as I was entering the path and they started laughing. And I was like, why? It's kind of rude. Like generally, you know, people here are not rude in that capacity. So I was curious. I was like, maybe I did something funny. Maybe I just look silly. I don't know. And then I got on the hike and I very quickly learned why they found that humorous, because I was literally pulling myself up kind of the side of a mountain, essentially by a rope that just had different notches tied into it, and kind of balancing my feet on the rocks as I pulled my way up. And towards the top, it was essentially just bouldering. Like there was really no clear route up to these massive rocks for the waterfall. So I definitely had a bit of a rough day in the jungle that day. Made it. But by the end, the locals, when they saw me come out, I was pretty scraped up and they were like, yep, that tracks. Like, could have told you that from the beginning.
Sounds like you did a lot of hiking when you were there. If you could go back and do one hike, which would you recommend?
Oh man, probably Hualien. There was a hike that kind of led you down to a riverbed. It was a really wide river. And it wasn't, I mean, we didn't go in rainy season either, so it was a little more calm. But it was just a lot of these different rocks that were different styles of marble. And they were kind of pink and purple and blue and just really, I don't know, really striking just to look at, but they were massive. So you could just sit on them by the river all day. And kind of when you're in that valley, you're really just looking up at all the mountains too. It makes you feel very small. So that probably is the one that I would like to do again. There was a lot of heritage of some native Taiwanese tribes in that area as well. So you kind of also get the historical side of things. There were a few temples that were like built into the sides of these mountains as well. So you kind of get a really good blend of the beauty of the mountains as well as the culture of the local and the native people.
All right. So you were there for a while, long enough to really experience the culture. When you were there, what were some things that you appreciated that you think, I don't miss this about the US, because you appreciated that so much about being there?
Yeah, you really learn just as much about your own culture when you travel somewhere as you do about the culture that you're living in. Something that I definitely did not miss was catcalls. In the States, I kind of get a lot of them, especially living in bigger cities as a young woman. But Taipei, I believe that year, 2017, was listed as the third safest country in the world. And it was evident. And the first few weeks I would, you know, leave my bag, even at a coffee shop, just like in the chair and constantly be looking back at my bag to make sure it was okay. Because in New York, things like that will get stolen really quickly. But I had a friend who was Taiwanese being like, why are you always looking at it? And I was like, well, you know, I just want to make sure it's safe. And she was like, you don't have to worry about that here. And that really took me a long time to adjust to. I found myself very paranoid. But the only really crime that they, kind of the joke is that the only really crime in Taipei is umbrella theft, because everybody leaves their umbrellas outside of the stores. And then if it starts raining, they just take whatever umbrella is nearby. But having that kind of reality compared to, I think the first day I got back, it was pretty sunny outside in the States. And so I just went walking around and I got catcalled probably two or three times. And I was like, oh man, I missed that feeling of safety. And then, you know, people who, if they saw you kind of walking alone at night, were very conscious of that and would give you space or would kind of cross the street even so you didn't think they were approaching you. And yeah, that level of respect I had never really encountered before, as well as just awareness of where people are and if you're making them feel unsafe.
Did you miss anything about the US when you were in Taiwan?
I missss things that I was realizing about our culture that I was never really aware of. One of which is I laugh pretty frequently. I mean, probably editing this, you'll see how much I've laughed just in every comment that I'm making, but I never kind of realized that laughter was an element of my culture. And in Taiwan, laughing is it's more reserved and it's more for kind of these intimate friendships than it just is with like strangers or people you interact with. You know, people from the States are also generally very loud. And so to laugh loudly is kind of inconsiderate in a public setting in Taiwan. But I realized laughter is just really when I feel comfortable with people, I will laugh with them. And I feel like I can do that very easily in the States. And in Taiwan, where that wasn't something that was as public with strangers per se, even, I did have a difficult time with that. I didn't feel as connected with people at first if I couldn't laugh at them, or if I really did laugh, they were kind of caught off guard by that. So I did miss that. I missed home and being able to just joke around with friends, but I really appreciated the relationships that I had built to where by the end we were laughing and being silly and really goofing around. Those felt, you know, much more like I had invested in it, you know, and then it paid off rather than just like a casual interaction I have where I'm laughing with a friend in the States. So by the end, it was really lovely. But at the beginning, I really did miss the laughter in the States.
Okay, well, that leads me to a question that I want to know then. As you spent your time there, as you grew and changed there and then came back, how do you feel like that experience overseas changed who you are? I think it's pretty common for people who spend any length of time out of the country to come back a different person than who they were when they left. And so how was that for you?
Yeah, when I first got to Taiwan, that was really, you know, I had been on trips kind of out of the country previously, but I was always with family or friends or a church group or something like that. So living in Taiwan was really the first time where I didn't have anyone that I was dependent on. It was just me. And my first week there, I got very sick. I accidentally drank the water from the tap, which I should have been aware of, but I didn't even think. I was just so thirsty. I like chugged a huge bottle of water just from my sink. Which really came back to bite me. And, you know, none of my roommate wasn't there yet. A few of my friends, I was one of the first people there. And I was just very lonely and very overwhelmed at not being able to buy medicine, even because I couldn't read the characters of what the medicine was. It was really kind of a low that I don't think I had experienced before of not having anyone to fall back on. And so I think that experience in and of itself definitely, it made me resilient, maybe in a sense, for lack of a better word, but it just also made me really kind of taught me who I was in those kind of crisis situations and really just made me kind of pull my bootstraps up and say, you know, I have to really invest in this as a community and as a place that I'm going to be living if I want to enjoy it. And it just really made me appreciate the little things as well. And I had a friend who had lived overseas for quite some time, and I called her and I was like, you know, how do you do this? How do you live away from every person you've ever known in an entirely new place? And something she had said was, you know, she'd give herself the 5 minutes to kind of get through it and cry if she needed to, if she felt lonely. And then she would go out and make sure she had at least one interaction with a stranger where she could, even if she didn't speak the same language, just kind of pantomime something. And that really was what got me through at first. Like those little interactions became everything. You know, I would compliment the woman that worked at the front desk about her jewelry every day. And even though she was just, that was the extent of our conversations, it was something I looked forward to every morning, was that she was going to wear a new piece of jewelry that I could comment on or ask her, you know, where she got it, my very broken Chinese. And so it really just made me focus on these day-to-day exchanges that, you know, in the States, I felt like were so common and I never really appreciated before. But to have a good interaction with someone or even a full conversation, that became just this really special thing to me. And so I think I carried that back with me definitely and still do today. Just being able to connect with someone in any capacity, I really, really value. and coming back from that into a culture and a lot of people largely who have never been overseas and have never had that experience. It was difficult, you know, but I think only then did I realize how much I had changed in that capacity, was that I now had this very kind of different worldview. Like America felt very small in a sense compared to everything that I had done and seen. To be around people who, you know, the United States is their whole world. They can't picture anything different. It was, you know, a little alarming at first. And I, at first, was kind of hesitant about that. I was like, I feel like I'm too different now, you know, like no one understands or gets it. But by the end, you find your people who are also kind of globally minded. And it really, it changes your perception in a way that's hard to describe, to not have your entire world just be the world that's in your pocket currently.
So any other ways that being overseas, living overseas for a while, impacted your perception of yourself as an American or as a Christian?
Yeah. I mean, I realized very quickly I am louder than I really even thought that I was. I laugh a lot more than maybe other people do. Both of those, you know, just being in a room where people are kind of making a face at you and how you're acting, you learn very quickly. As well as like public health, even I kind of my third week there got hit with these really bad allergies. So I'm sneezing all the time. And people literally would scoot their things away from me in coffee shops, like very visibly, or they would ask me to put a mask on. And, you know, this was pre-pandemic, even things like that. Just realized how more individually driven people are in the States, whereas Taiwan is much more kind of community oriented. And if you're in public, you should be thinking of the community and versus just yourself. So that definitely changed my perception a lot. I think I became very kind of adjusted to this sort of communal style of looking out for one another and thinking of other people wherever you are. But as a Christian, I got very involved in a church there. Shout out to Every Nation Taipei. They really became my home for quite a while. And that first week when I was really down, I had just kind of reached out to some friends and it was like, who might you know that would know someone in Taiwan that could connect me to a church of some variety? And sure enough, two people did know people who were there. And so I started going to this church and I called them on the phone that first week and I was like in tears. And I was like, I just, you know, I want a community here, like a church that I can attend. And they were so tremendously welcoming. They went and got meals with me just, you know, outside of church even. They always made sure I knew I was invited and welcomed anytime I wanted to be. They prayed over me when I first got there. And they really just reminded me and comforted me in what the church can and what the church should be, is really, you know, taking in and protecting your brothers and sisters in Christ like that. And so that was something I had never really seen, because I had never really been in a place of that severe discomfort where I really, really needed to rely on a community of believers like that. So having that was really encouraging. And it reminded me of the church in a global scale as well, and that I was someone they had never met. They probably didn't even entirely understand, you know, English is not their first language. They were still very much aware of, you know, brother, sister in Christ doesn't have borderlines on it. It's everywhere. So to be taken in by people who especially wouldn't know me or even understand me in that capacity was really lovely and charming, to be reminded that the church isn't just what in the States can be very politicized or polarized or divisive or mainstream pop culture churches, even to see the church in this global setting of family was really refreshing.
That's very cool. Okay, so we have a question that we end our interviews with, because we know that the people we talk to like to travel. So you get 2 weeks, all expenses paid, to go somewhere you've never been. Where are you going?
I feel like recently, it kind of changes, I feel like every year. But recently it has been New Zealand, because I do love the outdoors and I've heard everyone there is very friendly. So those two things make it right up my alley for a place I would want to go. I'd really love to just kind of drive around and kind of go on my own time. And I'm hoping to do that this year at some point. So that's top of the bucket list.
Sounds very good. I was obsessed with the idea of going to New Zealand back in around 2003 as the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh yeah.
Finishing up. I was like, wow, this is the most gorgeous place I've ever seen.
Yeah. I'm sure that amped up their tourism a ton.
I bet it did.
It's time for another Vicarious Encounters Top 5.
All right, this week on Top 5, we are counting down our top 5 favorite desserts. I have learned something very specific about Pete as I look through his list here. And it's really interesting. I want to hear more about it. But
number 5.
My number 5 is actually a recent addition to my list of favorites because 2 years ago for my son's birthday, my wife found this recipe for a chocolate chai cheesecake, and it quickly shot up to the top of things that I love. It is a fantastic combination. If you like chocolate and chai and cheesecake, it's as good as it sounds.
All right, my number 5 is molasses cookies. And you're going to notice about my list that all 5 of mine are cookies. It's because there's a book out right now called The 5 Love Languages, which is a pretty decent book, but it misses one of them. There is a 6th love language. It is cookies. That is my love language. And so molasses cookies come in at number 5. It's a typical Christmas thing for us. They're chewy. They're full of spices like nutmeg and ginger and molasses and sweet and absolutely delicious.
My 5th was, I don't know the actual name, so I called it Taiwanese angel food cake, which is essentially a Taiwanese cake that is very light and fluffy. And they would kind of give this small portion of it in every, if you ordered a kind of a meal pack in Taiwan, you would always get a little piece of this cake. Sometimes they have like cream paste in them as well. Sometimes there's another pastry that is similar to like a waffle that has this really sweet cream in the middle. So anything of that variety always makes my top 5.
Number 4.
My number 4 is generally strawberry shortcake, but in specifics, it is the strawberry shortcake that we make at my house. There are sort of 2 schools of thought on strawberry shortcake that I've seen, and one of them is very much in the sponge cake variety, and we are very much not that variety. So we are very specifically real shortcakes. Yeah, like I love the fact that summer's coming up and strawberries are going to be in season because I can't wait to get some again.
My number 4 is oatmeal raisin cookies. But in order to qualify for that slot, it's got to be the raisins that we soak in rum overnight ahead of time because it plumps them up. They get nice and fat so that they're not like overly dry and chewy. Instead, they're scrumptious, and it makes it so that the cookie itself, it just infuses the entire cookie with deliciousness.
Would you call that a re-graping process?
not until now.
My number 4, I put as coconut cream pie, very specifically the coconut cream pie from a kind of hometown diner place that's very decadent, has to have at least an inch of whipped cream on the top to qualify.
Very nice.
Number 3.
My number 3 is pecan pie with vanilla ice cream. Pecan pie is my favorite kind of pie. However, by itself, it doesn't make the list because the caramel is almost always too sweet. But vanilla ice cream is the perfect thing to cut that sweetness just enough to make it wonderful.
Well, my number 3 is chocolate chip cookies. I make the best chocolate chip cookies in the world, and at least by my judgment, and I'm uniquely qualified. I'm actually the world's leading expert, in my opinion. And but we definitely have a recipe. I love them. I'm happily willing to share, but Phil, I'm hearing your list and it feels like a lot of these are home-based for you. I'm just wanting to know when Taylor and I are coming over and enjoying those things with you.
Yeah, let us know. My number 3, you know, I had put something, And now that I'm hearing Pete talk about his family sweets, it's making me think of Pete's daughter and I, our friends, Jordan Grace. And Jordan Grace makes the best toffee I've ever had and probably will ever have, to the extent where every other year for Christmas, I specifically send her a text and ask her to bake me some, as I just tell her I want it as a Christmas gift. But I would pay a lot of money for that toffee any day. Very good.
Number two.
My last two are actually the exact opposite of the homemade list I've had so far. My number two is cannoli. I love cannoli and will eat it all the time, anytime you offer it to me. But when my wife and I, on a couple different occasions, got the opportunity to visit Boston and go to the areas with the Italian restaurants, and I bet that this is, you know, large city all over the place. This is just the place that I had the most incredible cannoli that I've ever had. And oh my goodness. Yeah. I still dream of it.
My number two is snickerdoodles. This is a comfort cookie for me. I don't have them very often, but the times that I've had the particularly good ones have usually been from a family member that particularly I could taste the love, you know, whether it was my sister or my daughter or my wife, they've all made snickerdoodles for me. And it's a cookie that just warms me up on the inside.
My number two, borrowing from Pete's long list of cookies here, is a chocolate chip cookie, distinguished that it must be warm, preferably still kind of melty and gooey in the middle. If I can have a good chocolate chip cookie, I'm set for the night. I don't need anything else.
And now, number one.
Well, number one for me is a return to those trips to Boston to have the real deal Boston cream pie. My wife has made a very good version of it at home, but still getting it in the city. And it would, the great thing was, you know, you could get it and it was fantastic at dozens of different places. You could go all over the place and pop in. It's like, oh, here's a Boston cream pie. And yes, it's going to be fantastic. It mixes all of the flavors that I love the most in my sweets. I love it.
And my number one is shortbread cookies. It's another one of those cookies that I can just taste the love. My wife Ann's shortbread cookies are basically, it's like she has figured out a way to package butter and sugar in maximum fashion into a cookie so that I can stuff my face. And I'm sure that it's low fat and healthy or not. But yeah, that's probably my number one. Love those things.
My number one is tiramisu. I don't know exactly how it became my number one, but it has become something that every time I do travel, no matter where I am, I'm always on the hunt for a good tiramisu. And you'd be surprised the places that you can find it. Even in remote corners of the world, they still have presented me some variation of it. So they have a really good place in Little Italy in New York as well. That's, if I'm ever feeling down, that's my go-to. It's a good tiramisu for the day.
On a side note, Pete, when my wife is down in your neck of the woods very shortly here, if you were to offer her shortbread cookies in exchange for the chocolate chai cheesecake, that might get you very far, because that is one of her absolute favorite things as well.
The downside of that arrangement, though, is that Anne is the one that makes the shortbread cookies. So I have to put her on the hook for that. I can't make them. Whereas the chocolate chip cookies I can make. So I have to see if I can emotionally manipulate. I mean, ask Anne if she'll make them.
Are you ready? It's time for Unpopular Opinions.
And today's unpopular opinion comes to you courtesy of Phil.
We were discussing when we were creating unpopular opinions, what are some things that we can talk about that are a little lighthearted? A couple of our unpopular opinions have been kind of heavy and serious. So today's unpopular opinion is that Star Wars movies just aren't that good. And I have a lot of thoughts on this, but primarily what it comes down to is this. They're full of world building, but the characterization is terrible. That's generally what I think. And I think it has to do with the fact that George Lucas, you know, based everything on Joseph Campbell's Way of Myth, and he did the monomyth. And of course, all of those stories, all of those ancient Greek stories are also very short on characterization because it wasn't the way that those stories were written. So I understand why the shortcoming exists, but we live in a world now where we want deeper characters, I think, than what they actually have to offer. But special effects made up for all the characterization needs in 1977.
Well, and for me, the series kind of takes itself a little too seriously at times. And then you get things like Ewoks and Jar Jar. And I'm thinking, so much for taking yourself seriously. It kind of runs off the end of ridiculous at that point. But I will say, you know, adjusted for inflation, five of the top grossing movies of all time are Star Wars films. So regardless of what we think, there's a whole lot of people out there loving them, even if they're not great. Taylor, what do you think of this week's unpopular opinion?
My goodness, I grew up in a house that really loved Star Wars. My sister really got attached to them, so I ended up kind of watching once a week with her. But it's funny that you mentioned Ewoks, because the kind of Ewok spinoff movies, those were my absolute favorite growing up. So maybe I think that they are good in the sense that they can appeal to a wide variety of people, which I guess depends on what you consider a good movie, if it can appeal to a wide variety. But I think some of the more recent reboots, I have not been as big of a fan of. I do think they rely really heavily on kind of visual and, I don't know, animated effects more so than story, kind of like Phil was saying. But at the end of the day, they do really entertain and they still draw a big crowd. So I think a lot of people would disagree with me.
Yeah, okay. To be fair, I also was raised on the other side of the divide. You know, there's the sci-fi Coke versus Pepsi here going on. And I was a Star Trek household growing up. And that's what I have always preferred as a result. So I'm sure that speaks into it to some extent.
Maybe if we're lucky, we'll get a top five Star Trek incarnations in movie or series at some point in the podcast.
We could definitely do that.
All right, so that's a wrap for this week. It's been great hearing from Taylor Herndon this week about Taiwan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. And you can find Vicarious Encounters wherever you like to get your social media. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can email us at vicariousencounters@gmail.com. If you have any comments for us on a particular episode, or if you have a top five you would like to see us do, or if you have an unpopular opinion you would like to see us disagree with, you can send it our way in any of those ways. Thanks again, and we will see you in a couple weeks.